This morning's message is going to be one of kind of a four-part series, but it's going to be scattered, peppered throughout the whole year of 2018, and hopefully we'll have a series similar to this every single year. The idea is that we would be looking at different aspects of stewardship and what God calls us to be stewards of because he's given us in abundance various things. Some of us have an abundance of skills and gifts. Some of us have an abundance of time. Some of us have an abundance of money. And some of us have an abundance of relationships that we've cultivated around us. And I think that these are all gifts from God that he's blessed each of us with so that we would use it not for our own gain or for ourselves, but we would use it so that we would be invested in God's kingdom. This morning, I specifically wanted to look at our skills or our talents, which is perfect for this parable, because this parable talks about talents. And it's actually the root of the word that we use for talent. So this parable has had such an impact on Western European thinking that we've begun to use a word that originally meant a measure of weight or a type of coin that was used, that was weighed out a certain amount of weight that meant a certain value within the society that Jesus was in, the Greek-speaking Roman society. And over time, as this parable was spoken into the lives and the culture of Western Europe, the language began to adopt this not as money, but instead as the gifts and skills, the talents that we have in our lives. And so it's perfect to use this analogy, to use this parable to talk about God blessing us with different gifts and skills and then calling each of us to be stewards of that skills. So let's look real quick at this parable and let's try and figure out a little bit what's going on here. Jesus says at first that this is a parable about a man. This man is going on a long journey. He's going to be away for a time, so he's not going to be able to attend to the business that is his own monetary business, and he is a very wealthy man, and so he calls three of his most trusted servants, and he gives each of them, according to their ability, Jesus says, a different amount of money, and so to one he gives five, to one he gives two, and to one he gives one talent. What was a talent in those days when Jesus was talking about it? Well, talent was, I said, a weight or a measure. But by the time that Jesus was sharing, and these words were written down later in the gospel, a talent would have been a type of coin that represented a weight or a measure of silver, and it would have equaled about 6,000 drachma of the day, or really 20 years worth of an average person's salary. Can you imagine that? What's an average salary in the United States? Does somebody know that? 55, I think that's actually a little bit high. I think in the 40s, right? Where is it at? 40, yeah, I think it's somewhere in the mid-40s is the average. So imagine that times 20. Some math genius, I didn't do this ahead of time, I should have. Some math genius, tell me, what is 40,000 times 20? That's pretty easy. I should have been able to do that in my head. Somewhere almost $1 million, right? And that's about what this was worth. It was like he was giving them $1 million. So he gives to one $5 million because he gives them five talents. He gives to one $2 million and he gives to one $1 million. Does that put a little bit of perspective on how wealthy this guy was? He was pretty wealthy, right? He could have bought and sold people left and right in his day. And yet here he is trusting these three servants with his money. What can you infer from this? If he's trusting these three servants with this amount of money, what can you infer about his relationship with these servants? That what? He trusted them, yeah. He wouldn't just call three random servants, right? He would call three servants that he specifically thought would do well with this amount of money, okay? So he was weighing the relationship he had with them, the trust he had given to them, and he was giving to them what he thought they could handle. What else? What else can you infer from this amount of money? Huh? Yeah. Think about that. If you had a boss, you were working for a company, and your boss said, here's $1 million. I have to go away for, you know, an undefined amount of time. And when I come back, please see that you've done with it what I would have done with it. What would you do? How would you approach that $1 million that your boss gave you? What? Mike, what did you say? Have a party. Mike is not one of my three servants I'm going to choose. Go to Switzerland, I heard over here. I also not one of my three servants. What did you say, Brian? Oh, put it all in Bitcoin. Would have been smart about a year and a half ago. You would have gotten dang near an investment like this. Because think about this. The one with the five talents invests the five talents. He does some trading and some selling. And by the undetermined amount of time, we don't know how much time, by the master time the master comes back, what has he gotten out of his investment? Yeah, he's got a 100% gain, right? Who in here wishes they could get a 100% gain on their investments? Especially after this last week, right? As everybody was paranoid and the Dow took a plunge and everybody freaked out and started selling. It's so fickle. Our economic systems and even the economic systems back then were so fickle. You can't guarantee 100% return, 100% advantage from any kind of investment that you're going to give. And yet the one who invested $5 million, five talents, got back five talents, the equal amount, in an increase. So he received 10 total. The one who invested two, what did he get back? He got back two. This is a great investment scheme, whatever they have going on. They must have been running some Ponzi scheme, because I think that's the only way you can get 100% return on an investment like that so quick. But yet both of them went and they took the risk of investing the money in some way, doing something with it, and they got 100% return with it. Let's remember that point for later on. But the third servant did something different with it. And what did he do? He buried it. He went out to a field, and out of, what does the text tell us? Out of what kind of emotion does he do this?
Fear.
Out of fear. Out of fear, one of the servants knows that his master is a harsh man in his own words, and he fears that if he goes and he invests it and he doesn't get a return on it, but indeed actually loses the money, that his master is going to be angry with him. So he decides the best way to deal with this is to go and bury it. How many of you have ever buried a treasure in your life trying to keep it safe? No one? Lee, you did? When was this? Like last week? Where is it at? In your backyard?
Third grade.
All right. Yeah, whatever happened to it? Did you forget about it? Yeah, did you just remember right now?
I think high school.
Okay. Now, you hear that every once in a while. You hear about a story of somebody, you know, tearing down a wall in a new house that they bought, and they're, you know, doing some remodeling, and what do they find in the wall? You know, piles and piles of cash or gold or something that somebody squirreled away. And yet, we know from the way that we've all been raised that that's the least responsible thing to do with a resource, is to bury it. Because of what? What's the main reason, some economist in here, that it's a bad thing to just squirrel it away and hide it? Inflation. Because inflation decreases the value of whatever money or whatever currency you're using at the time. And then you're guaranteed in the future that it's not going to be worth what it was at one point. So you have to at least invest and get an interest rate out of it just to keep up with inflation. So this servant is doing something that is really, really dumb. But in their day, many people did this. In fact, Jesus oftentimes uses parables talking about taking something that's really, really valuable and going and hiding it by burying it in a spot. And so he talks about this. Remember the pearl of great price, that parable where he's talking again about the kingdom of heaven and this person that found a pearl and they went and they hid it in a field so that it would be safe. And so in their day, they thought that if you buried something, there'd be no way for somebody to steal it from you. As long as you remember where it was, you can always go dig it up. And then you'll have it again. So he's doing what he thinks is the safest thing. And then his master comes home. His master comes home, and we aren't told how long a period of time his master's gone. He comes home, and every single good servant, if their master is gone, is mindful of the day that their master is going to return and to an accounting that they're going to have to give to their master of what they did while their master was gone to prove that they were faithful and that they were good stewards. And so this man immediately hears that his master's coming back, and he has to go do what? Dig it up. He has to go and dig it up and find his coin. He might have actually forgotten about it, right? How many of you would forget about $1 million you buried somewhere? Probably not. But he probably forgot about it, so I could imagine him, oh no, the master's back. Oh, where did I put that? Where? Okay, I knew I drew it down somewhere. Where's this map? Let me go through that. He's probably looking for the map, and he found it. And he finds his one talent, and he comes before the master. Now, imagine his chagrin as the two that go before him, the one that got the 5 talents and the one that got the 2 talents, are coming and saying, look, master, I took your 5 talents, I invested it, and I've received an additional 5 talents, so here's 10 talents. Here's what is yours. Take it back with interest. And the 2 talents is the same thing. What do you think? If you were that third guy, what would be going through your mind? Yeah, where can I hide? Look at this great picture. Doesn't he look a little ashamed back there? He's thinking, okay, how am I going to word this? Because I don't have anything to show for all these years that I've been in charge of this $1 million. I've just hid it in the ground. How am I going to explain this to the master? And what does he do? What is his explanation to the master? Fran says, but I knew you were a harsh man. I knew that you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seeds. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. How many of you from reading this believe that the master really is a harsh man? Raise your hand. Okay. Is there anything else within the text that would give you an idea that the master is a harsh man? Well, he does throw the guy out to the place where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth, right? There's that. But up until this point, there's no indication that he was any kind of a harsh man. We know he's a businessman, that he makes a good amount of money, that he has trusted with these servants, but we don't know much more about him until this servant himself says something about him. And it's interesting the way that the master responds. Because it seems like he's more incensed, at least as I read it, about the fact that the guy has described him as a harsh man and the assumptions that this servant has put on him than he has about the fact that he hasn't invested anything. He says, oh, you knew I was a harsh man then, did you? Then why didn't you act like I was really harsh and go and do with my money what I would have done with my money? Why wouldn't you go invest it and increase it to bring back to me at least interest on it over all these years? And so he's almost judging the man by the man's own judgment, right? It's like almost if this guy went and said, hey, I was a coward, I was a loser, I didn't invest your money at all, I was too afraid, and I was really dumb, and I just buried your money in the ground. Here, at least I have what your money's back. I wonder if the master would have been like, Fred, come on, man. But maybe would have been a little bit more merciful on him because the judgment of the guy himself wasn't bad or wrong on the master. But instead, the servant's judgment upon who the master is kind of alters the way that the master, I think, judges him. And he judges him more harshly because of the way that he's looking at him. Here's my question. If this is a parable about the gifts and skills that God has given to you. Really, this actually is a parable about everything God has given to you, your whole life. Because if you think about the fact that this is a 20 years worth of salary, what is Jesus essentially saying? That's an insane number to just be putting out there. But what is that essentially saying? That's essentially saying a person's whole working career, right? Their entire productivity of their entire life in this amount of money. And so the amount of money that they're being given is their life. It represents their entire life, not just money. And some people live longer than others. So that's why they get different amounts of money. So if this is really about how we use what God has given to us, our entire lives, what is the point of this parable? Because I think every parable has one major point, and the details are all meant to serve that one major point. If you were to guess, is someone in here willing to guess what the one major point of this is? Okay, why do you say that? Relationship to God. Okay. Anybody else have any other guesses? Bill, back there. Okay, I had a hand going up over here, Mark. All of those are phenomenal points. I hope you wrote them down because they're good points. They're not the point. I think the point is to know your master. To know your master. Because if this guy really knew his master, he would have known what his master would have done with that money. And he would have gone and he would have done with that money what his master would have done. If his master is a harsh man reaping where he has not sown, then he would go and find a way to reap out of this investment that he's been given because he knows what his master is. Do we at all think, when we think about the gifts God's given to us, the blessings that he's given to us, the skills, the gifts, the money, the time, everything that is wrapped up in who we are as God's stewards, do we at all begin to think about who the master is who gave us those things? Do we take that into consideration as we plan how we use what he's given to us in this life? And we know that this passage is not necessarily describing attributes of God. Why? Because God showed us who he is in the person of Jesus Christ. And our master is not a harsh man reaping where he has not sown. He's a gracious, kind, merciful, creative and sacrificing God. And so when he gives to us our lives, he expects us to use those lives in response the way he would use them. And so we wouldn't think about the little bit that we can give to just ease our guilt or our shame or to make some kind of obligation that we've made. Instead, we would think about everything that God has poured into you and made you to be, and you would give it all back in the same way that Jesus gave himself to this world. And you would think first about how your master would use it. And then you would do with it as he would do with it. Service, sacrifice, love, mercy, grace. I don't know about you, but I fall way short of this far too often. Some of us might think, well, I'm pretty old. What do I have left to give? If he hasn't taken you, you have something left. Some of you may think, I'm too young. I haven't learned enough yet. If you're alive, you have something that he's given to you that you can use for his glory. So what are we doing? Not that picture. That picture. I was going to make a point about how the Olympians spend how many hours for what? To receive a little gold thing around a necklace and some acclaim, and then how many people could remember their names next year? Heck, a month from now, how many of you will remember their names? And yet God has promised that if you do what is faithful, what he has given you, you don't go and bury it in the ground, assuming something about him that isn't correct, but you use it the way he would use it, not only will he promise you a 100% return on your investment, but in the end, you'll hear the words, "Well done, my good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your master."